Welcome to a psychodelicious conversation on mental health issues and trends from two local mental health professionals in the greater Lansing area. I'm Michael Stratton, LMSW.
And I'm Morgan Bowen, DNP, PMHNP, and we're here to provide you with a deep dive into the human experience of consciousness and beyond. Our aim is to be educational and entertaining, so just kick back and open your ears and your minds.
Hey, I'm Mike Stratton.
And I'm Morgan Bowen.
And we are sleep deprived because of the storms last night.
Yeah.
I am.
As we record this.
And we're recording this.
Really bad storm last night.
Yeah, bad storm.
I'm supposed to say my name. I'm Dedalian Lowry.
Dedalian. Oh,
that's right. Dedalian is our producer. Mm-hmm. He's sitting in with us.
So I press buttons.
And respond.
Well, we all press buttons. But,
that's true.
But you do the official button pressing. So
It's not a metaphor. It's an actual.
Literal.
It's a literal thing.
It's a literal versus a metaphoric.
There have been a lot of extreme weather events in the mid-Michigan area, the Lansing area, in the last however many years. Do you feel that? I mean, you know.
You know, I'm going to say this. I was working with a police officer once, and it was a full moon. And I said, oh, boy. It's a full moon. I bet you're not looking forward to this. And the officer said, you know what? It's not the full moon. It's the change in the barometric pressure. That's when people go wild. Hmm. And that's when they get an increase in domestic calls and violence and all kinds of stuff like that. And I thought, that's interesting. So I tried to track that, in terms of just moodiness or whatever, when there's big barometric changes like there was last night.
My mom worked at the hospital as a nurse's aide for many, many years. And she said every time a full moon was around, it did happen.
Well, that happens too.
I was an ER nurse for several years. And so, yes, the full moons, we would always experience
that.
Yep.
And believe it or not, that's not even our topic today.
No, it's
so
not.
There's something in
our background.
I was trying to give you a good segue because I was throwing in family there. So...
We're going to be exploring ancestry and culture and identity. And this was thanks to a listener. Her name is Mercy. She was interested in talking about this. And I said, sure, that sounds like a great one. So we're now at a portion of our podcasting careers where we're talking about stuff we don't know anything about.
And applying it to our knowledge and experience.
Morgan, I heard that you were into ancestry.
Right? I am. I caught the bug.
I am too. So let's talk about your family first.
So my father's family, you're talking about ethnicity and background.
This is the Bowen family, right?
The Bowen family, yes, is from the Great Lakes area going back to the early 1800s and came from the British Isles, Wales, UK, Northern Ireland as well. So moved into the Toronto area and then came down to actually Cleveland and then into Michigan. So very UK oriented over there, Northern European. And then my mom's side is primarily Scandinavian and Northern Irish / Scottish.
Okay. So did you do the whole Drule test?
I did.
Where you do the, was it 23andMe or was it Ancestry.com?
I did Ancestry.
I did Ancestry also. Have you found relatives that you didn't know you had, like third cousins?
Yeah. I have.
Have you been in contact with any of them?
I have not been in contact with any of them. I do look at their, because I do have an Ancestry.com profile, so I look at their information to see if it matches up. But I haven't contacted anybody.
Hmm.
So, I'm not opposed to it. I just haven't done it.
Well, the other thought that comes to my mind, and you went through psychological master's programs, that kind of thing. Did you ever do a genogram? Do you know what a genogram
is?
Yeah. So a genogram, to the listeners, it's doing your family tree, but from a psychological perspective where you're studying what personality traits there are and relationships people have with each other, that kind of thing. What did you find out from yours?
Well, actually, when I did it, because I came from a nursing background, it was more related to medical history, so cancer and heart disease, diabetes, you know, major chronic illnesses, things like that. But in doing Ancestry.com with more of a just, I guess, my occupation in mental health, there's patterns, especially in my dad's family, of, well, there's definitely alcoholism on both sides. So there's that substance use, primarily alcoholism, as far as I can understand. But there's also a pattern with my dad of having children young, having one child young, 19, 20, and then having a relationship that then breaks up, and then having a second marriage or a second relationship later with more kids, so four or five more kids. Yeah. So there tends to be this pattern of a young child, or I'm sorry, a child when he's a young age. My dad went through this, as did his grandfather and his grandfather. And then the grandparent takes care of the child a lot of times.
Oh, that's interesting.
So I have reflected on how that has impacted the dynamic of, like, several generations of my family.
Yeah, yeah, that is interesting. Well, both those things that you mentioned, both noticing the different addictive traits, I've got that in my family too, on both sides, then the childbearing kind of thing. That it's interesting because I've met your brothers, and your oldest brother is definitely different than the three younger kids.
Yeah, he's my half-brother. My dad was married to his first wife. They were 19 and 20. Then he had three other sons starting about 9 years after that. So my oldest brother is 11 years older than I am. And my oldest brother, his name is Kirk, had a son at 19 as well. So he raised him and married, so a bit of a different scenario, but had children young.
So how are you most like your dad, and how are you most different from him?
We do very similar things professionally, both intellectual or school-focused, education-focused.
He was a psychiatrist.
Stubborn, bull-headed. I would say my dad is a bit more than me, but I have the streak. Independent, I would say very independent. I reflect on that because, you know, my dad, his parents were young and had substance use issues and were not really available for parenting at the time that he was young. And so I think he pretty much had to do it himself. So when I was young, my parents didn't have substance use issues, but they were working. We were latchkey kids. So it was, both my parents were professional, and we were kind of left on our own to figure a lot of stuff out. I mean, it wasn't like we were neglected, but we weren't necessarily guided.
You were free range.
Exactly. We were free range kids. So I think that, you know, fostered independence
and
sorry. Lack of supervision. Some marginal behavior.
How about your mom? How are you most like her?
Oh, that's a good question. We have very similar interests. Both art, cultural types of things, reading, more, I would say, liberal arts or humanities types of things. Mm-hmm. Conversationalists, more relational in social development and socialization. My dad, he had friends, but few friends and close friendships, was very focused on work. And I think my mom and I are more social and more interested in relational friendship part of life.
Is there one side of the family you know more about than the other side?
I know more about my dad's side, partially because my dad did ancestry work himself. He's actually who I caught the bug from. I pirated his account, ancestry account, before I had my own.
Okay.
My grandmother's mother died. She was English, from England, but she died when she was young, so she didn't necessarily know a huge amount about her until we had access to ancestry.com types of things, then it becomes much more available. And then my grandfather on that side left home when he was 17 to join World War II, and didn't seem that he was very interested in maintaining or having a lot of information about his family. He kind of detached from them and I'm not really sure why.
That's one of the things that's so interesting, is the mysteries, you know, the mysteries. You look at your family tree, and then there's some kind of, like, for an example, my mom's family came from Nebraska. They were Irish, so I was able to trace it back that far. But my maternal grandfather was one of five siblings, and four siblings moved out to Minnesota, and he stayed in Nebraska. And it's like, why?
Hmm.
Never know, you know, no answer to that. No, mm-hmm. no answer to that. How about you, Dedalion? What do you know about your family? sorry.
Tell us your family background.
This is a pop quiz.
I mean, you know, as far as the ancestry stuff, I've done the ancestry.com, did some research. I never did the saliva test yet. I will probably do that at some point. I do have interest. I wasn't able to get too far. The best I can tell you is most of my ancestry, as far as the lineage goes, is Dutch and French, and I've got some stuff going back to the British Isles somewhere.
Okay.
You know, and, you know, I don't want to dive into it as much as...
as we are.
As you are, but my dad is, he's passed away. You know, it's when you think about people you want to emulate, he is not one.
Okay.
He was not somebody that was in my life much, which I am very grateful for, actually.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Violent man, lots of substance abuse, so...
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Sorry.
No, not at all.
Thank you for
it. It was a part of the life.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating when people start talking about their families, and it does get personal pretty quick, and especially if you're in a kind of a milieu of other people sharing at that level, you feel like it's okay to talk about it yourself in some ways.
One of the things I find really interesting in my own journey is all of these patterns that exist. You can begin to see if you get into it. So like the one I was saying with my dad's side of the family, having, you know, children young and then going on to have, you know, another family with a more settled, when they're more settled in their life. And then thinking about what the experience is like for that, I'm going to say rogue kind of, you know, the oldest who doesn't have the benefit of older parents. I mean, typically older parents are more settled. They have more resources. They know more. They're just more set up to parent. And I've had that dynamic in my own family growing up, and looking back through these generations, I could just imagine that was repeated, you know, at least three or four times that I could identify, and thinking about, just why is that? why do the Bowen men have this pattern?
Now, interestingly, there was a psychologist named Murray Bowen. Do you know Murray?
Yeah, do
you
know Murray? I know of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I actually saw him up in Traverse City and got a chance to hear him talk. But he was very much into doing those family genograms and would talk about emotional cutoffs. He thought systemically, and he thought that these patterns did repeat themselves through the generations, and to understand yourself, to be able to understand previous generations, mm-hmm. that what mm-hmm. you were doing was either reacting to it and absorbing it, or reacting against, you know, some pattern that would have, you know, Freud would have called it unconscious, but it's like embedded in us in a genetic level. Hmm.
Yeah. Well, they talk, you know, the idea of generational trauma is something that we talk about probably more in our current context of mm-hmm. mental health. People who have trauma that you've gone through as a child is very impactful, or has the potential of being impactful for life moving forward, that can then be re-triggered or re-experienced when you have your own children. And so that pattern, whether it be recreating an abusive situation or being just very cognizant of that, it, I would say, probably always informs parenting styles one way or the other if you've gone through that.
Well, when we go into this, you know, we're talking about nature versus nurture, you know, which was one of the big debates. And it is both, you know, so we got a genetic structure, but also we're affected by our environment. We're affected by the culture. Bessel van der Kolk wrote this great book called The Body Keeps the Score. And he believes, and he quotes research, that trauma does get encoded at a genetic level, mm-hmm. and that then exposure to other traumatic situations can unlock potentialities, genetic potentials that become manifested in a person's life. And so things like substance use, things like depression, things like anxiety, just different traits of that sort can depending on what's going on. And we can, one of the things I thought we could talk about in the next section even would be the adverse childhood experiences. Mm-hmm. You know, we can get that up on the screen and kind of go through that together. But let me talk about my family.
Please do.
So my family, the Stratton side, I did the whole 23andMe, or not 23andMe, the Ancestry.com thing. And I didn't know this, but my dad would say it occasionally, but he would talk about a Nathan Stratton that we were related to. My grandfather, believe it or not, was born in 1865.
Your grandfather?
My grandfather was born in 1865. I never knew the guy. He died in 1933. My dad was young. He was a teenager. So my
How old was he when he had your father, when your father was born?
My father was born in 1917. So it was his second wife. And here's one of the weird things with ancestry, because my dad, he had a family, he had two brothers, and I started seeing all these second cousins that were female, and it's like, wait, where did they come from? So my grandfather, John Stratton, my grandfather, had a family before he married my grandmother that never got talked about, and they were out in Colorado. He had five children with them, and I said, well, she must have died. You know, maybe she was widowed or something.
Or it could have been those secret families.
That's exactly what I think it was, because I looked it up, and no, she didn't die until the 1970s. So she died 40 years after he did. So he married a much younger woman and then moved on and married another younger woman. So strange stuff. But anyway, but it goes back before that, all the way back to the Revolutionary War. So we were back in those days. So I'm a son of the Revolution. Yay.
Yeah, on my dad's side, same for us on my dad's side. Well, my dad's mother's side was back in the Carolinas during the Revolutionary War.
Yeah, ours were from Jersey, New Jersey. But on my mother's side, I mentioned the Irish thing. What my mother knew, and this is one of those things where without things like Ancestry or 23andMe and these different things, is like, how far back can you go? Like, I knew my two grandmothers, both of them died when I was young, didn't know either grandfather really at all. But she said that her grandfather spoke with a brogue. And so going back to, well, where did he come from? And I was actually able to trace back that he had lived in Kansas, but he had come over to the United States in 1853 at the end of the potato famine. Mm-hmm. He was 13 years old, 1853.
He was skinny.
Yeah, real skinny, like starving to death. And when we went to...
Why Kansas, though?
Interestingly enough, and Ancestry.com...
Because that's like the middle of the country.
They had an answer to this, that there was a priest in New York that was scooping up these Irish immigrants and trying to get a settlement out west. And at that time, they were really trying to develop the West.
Settle the West, sure.
Yeah, so there were a bunch of Murphys that were in Atchison, Kansas, and a bunch of Irish that were in Atchison, Kansas. But the thing that was so profound to me is that my maternal great-grandmother, she came from Athlone, Ireland. He came from Cork, Ireland. They both came over on the same ship. So they didn't know each other until they got on that boat. And he was 13, she was 15. And I could identify the dock, the boat that came over, all of that stuff. And I got to stand on that dock. And I talk about this occasionally, you know, and when I give talks, you know, I stood on that dock and thought about these two teenagers that were basically starving to death that came over here. And I got a chance to stand on that dock, you know, like almost, you know, 175 years later and say, hey, thank you. Thank you. We made it. We made it. We're here. Yay.
Mm-hmm.
And just such a powerful thing. But a lot of alcoholism, definitely. I think food was probably an issue for a long time. You know, they lived through the Depression. They lived through the Dust Bowl. You know, I wondered about that for myself. I'm diabetic. You know, it's like, well, was that encoded in some way in me? You know, a drive to eat sweet things and drink a lot of beer.
There's definitely a lot of thought about it. I'm more familiar with Native Americans and diabetes. There's a high disparity when you look at the proportionality, with the idea that going backwards, the diet of you know, Native Americans prior to contact was not what it is now. And so the ability to digest and to regulate glucose based on genetic history is very different. So
yeah,
I'm not familiar with, you would think the Irish eat all those potatoes, they can...
Well,
regulate that is probably a stereotype, but probably more than just potatoes.
Yeah. I don't know. But you look at the history of trauma, you know, mm-hmm. of being uprooted, of moving. They moved from the Dust Bowl to Michigan so that my grandfather, my maternal grandfather, could get work at General Motors. He had a sister that was working at Fisher Body, and she said, there's work up here. You can come up here. And that's where my mom came up here, and my dad, who had been not orphaned, but he was living, they were living without a father. His best friend lived next door to where my mom and her family moved into, and that's how they met and got together. But just how random, I mean, the odds of them meeting and getting together.
Right.
Yeah. The odds of any of us being here is infinitesimal.
Do you know of any mental illness in the family? Any,
I think there's a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
One of my memories of my grandmother, who died when I was, I think, 18 or 19, was she'd be standing there wringing her hands and just always worried, you know, if the storm last night would have just killed her.
Yeah.
She was always wringing her hands, always worried about something bad happening. If we had a war movie on, she would be reacting like it was really happening in real time. She'd go, oh. And I'd say, Grandma, this is a TV show. This isn't real. This isn't, you know, don't worry about this.
In my Ancestry.com travels, I came across an article that my grandfather, so my mom's father's maternal grandfather, completed suicide. And it was in a news article because it occurred during some type of event, like a party. And if you read old newspaper articles, there's, you know, kind of a what's happening in town sort of, you know, this person had
it
a party.
During a party?
Yeah. So it somehow happened at a gathering, and it was pretty graphic about how it occurred and what happened.
What did he do?
Slashed his own throat.
What?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So it was very dramatic. I mean, that's a very dramatic
way to go out of a party.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And
that's
it
beyond
was,
Irish
it was
goodbye.
Him, yeah. So it was him and my grandfather's mother was there. And
this
her,
is
she
on
had
your dad's
sister.
Side? Your dad's
this is on my mom's side.
Okay.
And they were from Kansas. And this is my grandfather who left
so
home
turns out
at 17. Wow. He left home at 17 and never really talked a lot about his family.
In particular,
his mother. My mom has told me that her father did not have a good relationship with his mother.
So we're talking about identity to some extent, too. And, you know, being gay, do you find that in your family tree at all?
No, I want to.
Do you wonder if maybe was he gay?
No way of knowing. There's nothing that I would
What part of Kansas? What part of Kansas was he from?
That, I guess I don't know. It is, I would have to look back at the information. It's not a huge city. It's in the middle of nowhere. And he grew up, you know, Depression era, and joined the military when he was underage to go to World War II. And
okay.
then kind
also
of
something
left.
That could have been a factor too.
Yeah. Wow. But I've always wanted to, I mean, I just would really love to find somebody that was gay in my family tree, but it's very hard to find that unless you have some sources. But nobody in my generation even is. So
there's a picture of our family, I guess three generations of us. There's 25 people in this picture in the backyard of my sister Gail in back of her house.
Mm-hmm.
And out of the 25, there I would say 13 of us are alcoholic or addicts.
Oh.
And
how many are gay? I thought you were going to tell me about all the gay people.
Yeah, I thought that's where I was going to. 13 of us are gay.
13 of us are kind of gay. Possibly gay. I'm sorry. The other thing I was thinking when I was looking back at the patterns was, you know, my family moved a lot, especially on my dad's side, you know, and part of it was just the progression of the Western frontier, you know, starting in the Carolinas, then the next generation they're in Tennessee, and the next one they're in Ohio, and the next one they're in Illinois, and the next one they're, it's just a lot of moving, looking for what's the next, you know, either a better job or a better life. And that particular side of my family was my grandmother on my dad's side, and she moved to Detroit during the war to work in factories because her dad died. They had a farm and things went under. And so there's a lot of what else is out there. If this isn't working, next? Versus I think of like a New England family where they have resources and they're, you know, they were English and had money and they settle in New England and they stay there for, you know, these are the Yankees.
Well,
the,
I was
the
thinking
New
that
Englanders.
Anybody who lives here is an immigrant unless you're Native American. Sure. So that encoded piece of looking for the next thing is always there. A Psychodelicious conversation is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is no substitute for therapy and should not be treated as such. If you feel a need for real therapy, you should consult your local provider, Google therapy or therapists in your area, check with community mental health or a suicide hotline if you are feeling suicidal.
Mike and Morgan welcome your questions, feedback, or dilemmas. Feel free to send us an email at apsychodeliciousconversation@gmail.com. That is a psychodelicious, psychodeliciousconversation@gmail.com.
The views expressed on this podcast are solely the opinions of Mike Stratton and Morgan Bowen, and do not reflect the views or opinions of any site broadcasting this podcast. Replication of this podcast without written permission is strictly prohibited.